another Pence in Congress, a sprawling profile of the vice president, that plus another go at Mexico Joe, disaster relief, and more on Indiana Week in Review, the week ending October 20th, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Greg Pence, older brother of Vice President Mike Pence, launched a bid for Indiana's 6th congressional seat. Greg Pence rolled out a website, Twitter account, and video announcing his bid to replace Luke Messer, who's leaving his House seat to run for Senate. A Columbus native, Pence has never run for office before, though most recently he's been part of Messer's Senate campaign team. The campaign announcement video labels Pence a fiscal conservative who supports an anti-abortion, pro-Second Amendment platform, and Greg Pence says he'll be a strong proponent of President Trump's agenda. Pence, who owns antique malls in the state, joins an increasingly crowded GOP primary that includes State Senator Michael Crider, Muncie small business owner Jonathan Lamb, and Fortville businessman Stephen McKenzie. Is Greg Pence the favorite to win Indiana's 6th District House seat? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Katzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney Pence has a famous name and the support of those with deep pockets. Is that really all he needs?
Well, I don't know if that's all he needs. It certainly gives him a leg up, and I assume that he supports the same policies his brother does. So he wants to deny contraceptives to unmarried women. He wants to shut the government down. He thinks he shouldn't have abortions even in cases of rape and incest. And LGBT community ought to be, as the president says, hung. All you see from him in this announcement is he's pro-gun, and he wants to make health decisions for women. You don't hear anything about economic development or raising the minimum wage or any of the things that would have an impact on the community he wants to represent. All he wants to talk about are the divisive social issues that whole wing of the party has used to basically stir up hate in this country, and it's kind of unfortunate because, actually, he's really probably no different from Messer in that regard, so I guess it's a horse apiece.
He's never held elected office before, served in the military, he's worked in state government for a little while, but never held elected office, but does that last name make him the front runner?
I think it has to, sure. I mean, name ID is a big thing out of the gate. He's checked a couple boxes. He's put together a campaign team, a really good campaign team. I think that news will be out here shortly. From a financial standpoint, he's checked that box to be able to raise money. But in a primary election, ground game means a lot. You know, interacting with party organizations and being on the ground at party events and having door knockers and phone banks and all the grassroots things that you need to win, he'll need to bring. And I think Mike Crider, the state senator Mike Crider from Hancock County, from Greenfield, already in the race, pretty well known. I don't want to discount him. I think he's a very well regarded legislator. He's a very accomplished legislator. And so I don't think this is over and done yet. They're both going to have to work. Greg Pence is going to have to work for it. I think he knows that, but I think it's going to be a campaign going into the spring.
Does Crider have a shot?
Sure, he has a shot for the reasons that Mike suggested. But again, I would agree with those who said that at this point, because of the name ID and what I presume would be the enthusiastic support of Luke Messer, the incumbent in that district. I mean, keep in mind, they've been aligned closely. It was, in fact, Greg Pence who starred in his sort of
announcement
video. So I would be shocked if he didn't return the favor now. So that's a factor. I mean, that is, in terms of geography, that is his brother's old district, is it not? So, I mean,
Mostly.
Yeah, so, I mean, you do have a situation where people not only may be familiar with Luke Messer in terms of an endorsement, but,
Pence.
Which Pence are we voting for? And Memories get foggy, but I think you'd have to give him the advantage at this point.
We're like not on a first-name basis with the Bronze or the Pences anymore in these congressional...
Yeah, exactly.
John, I want to ask about Crider for a second. He was the chair of the Senate Roads Committee, so he's got the gas tax hike hanging over his head. Do you think that will make a difference as he tries to mount this, I mean, what you almost have to call a challenge to who we assume is now the front runner, Greg Pence?
The analysis taken, I think that referendum or the primary system has become a referendum on the extremes, and in the Republican side that means very conservative voters tend to come out in greater numbers than those who are moderate. And if that's indeed the case, I'm sure that the gasoline tax will be a big issue that Greg Pence uses to hammer on Senator Crider. It's unfortunate because it's a very reasonable situation and position for him. But it's likely to be used against him in a primary setting where you have an awful lot of conservative folks coming out.
It crossed my mind that, as close as Messer and Pence Sr. are, is he a placeholder if Messer doesn't get the nomination for Senate?
Well, that seems unlikely. I think Greg Pence has discovered some political ambitions of late.
Okay.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, is Greg Pence the favorite to win as he enters the 6th District U.S. House race? A yes or B no. Last week's question, how much stock should people put into a poll showing President Trump approval rating is below 50% in Indiana? 62% say a lot, 21% say a little, and 17% say none at all. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, The New Yorker this week published an in-depth profile of Vice President Pence that aims to explore, in part, what he would be like as president.
The extensive piece notes Pence's long connection to top Republican megadonors like the Koch brothers, delves into his background and his faith, and details his rise to power both in Indiana and within the Trump campaign. It also includes some less than flattering characterizations, including sycophant in chief, a puppet for the Kochs, and an ineffective leader and administrator. And notably, it details behind-the-scenes rumors that President Trump mocks Pence's piousness and allegedly joked that Pence wants to, quote, hang all gay people.
Mike O'Brien, we've seen profiles of Trump administration officials before that have soured the president on those people a little bit. But considering the slant to this piece wasn't entirely positive, I would say. Will Mike Pence avoid the doghouse with Donald Trump?
There's some silver linings in there. There were some good Greg Pence jokes that were sprinkled throughout it. The good news is Mike Pence is the only one who can't be fired, right? You can't fire Mike Pence. So he's not at risk of that. But this thing was a 13,000-word dumpster fire. I mean, it was like there were some positive, there were some negative, there was a lot of inaccurate. There was a lot of things that were just teed up. It was really an opinion piece or a kind of a feature story, a feature piece in the New Yorker, which isn't going to be favorable for you, for you anyway. And it featured, they interviewed people from Indiana who we've known have hated Mike Pence and are running an agenda forever. So. I kind of take it with a grain of salt. It was kind of an entertaining read. It did slant negative, but in parts it was so absurd that it's hard to take it seriously.
There were a lot of inaccuracies, factual inaccuracies in the piece. Does that sort of negate anything that it might have, any point it might have been trying to make?
I don't think so. I mean, the headline, you think Trump is bad, or, you look at this and you think, oh my goodness, I didn't think it could get worse. Bubbles? Was that inaccurate? His nickname, Bubbles?
The source was his brother.
Knowing what I might say about my younger brother, I'm not entirely sure whether that
you
was
wouldn't
accurate.
Call him Bubbles because he'd deck you.
That's probably.
And
true.
I'm looking at that, and of course the ridiculous thing about not having dinner with a woman unless his wife is there because somehow she's going to tempt him or seduce him or it's absurd. But that's, of course, Mike Pence. I thought it was on balance. Obviously there are things that need correcting in there, but on balance it was pretty negative because it talks about his record, and that is pretty negative.
What did you think about on balance? What did you think of this piece?
I thought it was a fair reflection. You can worry about the things that need to be corrected or adjusted, but it did talk to a lot of people. Our old boss, Harry McCauley, unfortunately passed away this fall, but... was a part of that, and I thought his observation was one that a lot of people have, and that is that they've known Mike Pence to be an ambitious person for a long time. I think it's the kind of thing that the left will love. It's the kind of thing that the right will hate. And when we get to the end of the cycle here, it's probably not going to make much difference except for that headline that Ann talked about.
To that point, though, I mean, when you talk about the possibility of President Pence, and it was certainly talking about him at times a lot sooner than the 8 years that Donald Trump would probably like in that office, do you think that gets under Donald Trump's skin, or does Mike Pence skate by on this one?
Maybe it's a good time for Mike Pence for this story to hit. I think the president has his plate pretty full right now with other matters. Of course he reads these things closely and watches TV closely, and he's probably the greatest consumer of news. If there were more people like that, newspapers wouldn't be in trouble now.
I don't think he reads,
all right,
however.
Yeah, let's be nice.
That's pretty obvious.
So I don't think it necessarily would get under his skin. You know, the issue here, I guess I'm going to be the contrarian a little bit. I think when you do have some profound factual errors, such as we saw in this, let's take an example, with the gaming, the supposed coziness between Mike Pence when he was governor in the gaming industry and the suggestion that he had used executive orders to granted my memory ain't what it used to be, but I don't remember I don't remember it that way. and I do think it does call into question. I mean, what do we all learn our first day of, right, those of us who went to journalism school, you know, if you get one thing wrong, that sort of unravels the perception of the accuracy of the whole thing. So generally probably told us a lot we already knew, but those errors are problematic.
Well, national Republicans are finding new ways this week to push the attack on Democratic incumbent Senator Joe Donnelly's ties to his family's company, which outsourced jobs to Mexico.
The latest strategy from the Senate Leadership Fund, Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's de facto political arm, is a website, MexicoJoe.com. It's another go at tying Donnelly to the derisive label that emerged after revelations that Donnelly's family company, in which he held stock until earlier this year, sent jobs to Mexico, all while Donnelly made attacking outsourcing a tentpole of his public profile. The site aggregates negative news articles about Donnelly, who's considered one of next year's most vulnerable incumbents.
John Katzenberger, while this is likely the most effective issue the Republicans will probably use to attack Joe Donnelly now and in the fall, or next fall, is this the best messaging of that issue?
Well, we'll see what issues rise between now and then before I make the judgment on the most effective. But I will agree with you on the tactic here. You know, the facts are that his family's company, which he had shares in, had done what is alleged, or what is charged in the ad. But one thing, we're so early in the process to be mounting this kind of a harsh attack. How long can you sustain that, and can you sustain the, you know, the potential outrage from all of that? And second, you know, remember the band, the mariachi band outside his announcement and all those things. You know, it just borders on beyond silly sometimes. And so the way they're pressing the issue, I think, maybe trivializes it some, and you lose the impact of the facts of the issue. And I think that's going to be interesting to see how it plays going forward.
The Mexico Joe label is obviously something they're really pushing, and it's right out of the Trump playbook, obviously. Can that be effective in 2018 the way it was for Donald Trump in 2016?
Well, I think Donald Trump has shown, and other candidates have shown, if you repeat something frequently enough and at a volume that is, that people hear it, and by that I don't mean literally volume, I'm talking about with a paid message behind it and the ability to get that message disseminated, people do tend to, it sinks in and becomes reality. I think, you know, John talked about how early we are in this process. I think this would have been more damaging for Joe Donnelly if this had come much later in the campaign, because two reasons. One, if this is the drumbeat that's going to be sounded from now till November of 2018, people are going to probably get tired of it. I mean, attention spans are attention spans, and they're going to be looking for other topics. And then this has given Joe Donnelly an opportunity to say, I divested myself. I mean, though I sold those shares, wasn't aware I did this. So there is the remediation attempt that, again, if this were in the final weeks of the campaign, then I think it really would have some traction.
Is this a little early for it to still be effective in crunch time a year from now?
I don't think it's ever too early to remind people that Joe Donnelly's a hypocrite. So that presumes that argument, just from a campaign strategy standpoint, I mean, messaging and campaign comes in layers. I mean, people gave Todd Young a hard time for saying over and over and over again that he was a Marine. There were still people in September and October. Since September and October last year, people were just learning for the first time that Todd Young was a Marine because they just started paying attention. They're not us. You know, they're not paying attention to every part of the message. And you do this over time to kind of create a profile and an assumption about, you know, who are these candidates and who are these people that we're running against. Now, the one point that's been made about this and Senator Donnelly's defense is that he gave all the money to charity. He outsourced these jobs. He profited from it. And then when he got caught, he gave all the money to charity. I don't think he get a lot of points for that. So, no, I don't think it's too early. I think there's more to the story than you.
You know, in my business, this question's been asked and answered. He gave all the money to charity, in sharp contrast with Trump's daughter, who has all her manufacturing operations abroad. That doesn't count. That's okay for Republicans to do, but not okay for Donnelly's family to do. He's answered the question. He's given the money away and to a good cause. And he does make charitable contributions, again, in sharp contrast with the
president. And I do think this means that Republicans behind this and Mitch McConnell and others better be 100% sure that they are purer than fill-in-the-blank.
They're not.
Because nothing is worse than perceived hypocrisy than people who point
out
perceived hypocrisy and then are found to have been as hypocritical.
Yes. There's hypocrisy.
I'm sure I followed all of that.
Yes.
Congressman Luke Messer this week defended his vote against disaster relief for Puerto Rico and seemed to get some details of his district wrong.
Messer was one of four Indiana Republicans who voted against disaster relief for Puerto Rico. Jackie Walorski, Jim Banks, and Todd Rokita also voted against the measure, as they each did for hurricane relief funding for Texas and Florida. The lawmakers argued that relief bills shouldn't be a blank check, that the measures should include cost reduction provisions to offset the aid costs. In an interview with Lafayette Journal and Courier columnist Dave Bangert this week, Messer defended his vote. Bangert brought up a previous measure, disaster relief that went to Henryville, Indiana, after its devastating 2012 tornado. While Messer rejected the comparison, he also said Henryville is in his congressional district when it's not.
John Schwannis, I'll start with the disaster relief votes. Will Hoosier voters care, quite frankly, whether Luke Messer and Todd Rokita voted for these aid packages?
I doubt it. I mean, again, this is not we're not just freezing time here and looking at the same circumstances for the next year. Other issues will right. intercede, I think. And so, could this be sustained? Yes, if the opponents, alluding to what I just mentioned on an earlier response, if you have the financial wherewithal and the desire to make something the marquee issue in your campaign in attacking your opponent again and again and throw a lot of money into it, yeah, you can resonate, but is that really the issue that would move voters? I'm guessing not. So I think this will probably be forgotten before another hurricane comes and wreaks havoc.
Well, there's now a pattern. These four lawmakers have voted against the aid packages so far and will probably continue to do so if those aid packages remain the same a year from now or whenever, because their philosophical belief is you can't have an aid package without cost reduction somewhere else. So again, I'll ask, will Hoosier voters quite frankly care whether their elected representatives voted for help for somewhere else?
I think that in this case where they are consistently against the aid packages, they're better off than if they vote for them in some cases and not in others. And that's where they run into trouble. We've seen that situation, for instance, in Texas, where there were people who voted against the relief for Hurricane Sandy, but were all for relief for Hurricane Harvey. That's the kind of inconsistency or hypocrisy that will get you in trouble. You'll have to answer, if you're these representatives, why you don't want to vote for this relief, but at least they have an answer, and they can give it, and the voters can make a choice.
Now I want to talk about Luke Messer and Henryville. Todd Rokita's campaign already
map of Indiana.
Todd Rokita's campaign already pouncing on this as another version of Evan Bayh's problem with not knowing his address last year. Does it have that kind of? Have that kind of effect?
I think it has potentially that kind of effect because it basically says there's my people and then there's everybody else. And when you look at those statistics out of Puerto Rico, for example, when you look at people without drinking water and without electricity and going on 45 days now, and the response of the administration has been terrible to the plight of American citizens in Puerto Rico. I think that where it really comes in and where this could have staying power is, God forbid, we have another tornado in Indiana, okay? And something happens in central Indiana, for example. What does he do then? Is he holier than thou and say, I'm not voting unless we see cuts? Or does he succumb to the obvious pressure of having his neighbor's house roofs blown off and do something?
He'll be in more trouble if he is inconsistent about that.
That's right. But I bet you, you know what? He'll be inconsistent.
Yeah, you're
because,
right.
Because, you know, right. He's putting himself forward first.
On the issue of Luke Messer getting his district wrong here, where Henryville is not in his district, it's frankly not all that close to his district. Todd Rokita's, I mean, the Rokita campaign has already been pushing the narrative that, oh, Messer lives in Virginia, he's not really in Indiana, he's not connected to Indiana, he's not a real Hoosier anymore.
Is that Tennessee Trey we're talking about?
No, we're talking about Luke Messer.
I'm sorry, I got
Congressman Trey Hollingsworth. Yeah, really worked. Didn't it?
But it certainly had an effect on Evan Bayh last year, and I mean, this plays right into Todd Rokita's hands. How worried does Luke Messer have to be about this slip-up he made in this interview?
I don't think very worried. Evan Bayh was so detached from Indiana politics and phoned it in for so long that there were a lot of layers to that message that kind of caught fire with the fact that he had a condo he didn't live in and probably hadn't been in a decade.
Not true.
Instead, he was living in a mansion in Delaware, living in a mansion in Virginia or somewhere else. There was a lot more to that. That was a much deeper message than Luke Messer saying, hey, it's a big state, but we'll take these things as they can. Philosophically, as long as these things are paid for, we're for relief and we're compassionate people, we're compassionate as Hoosiers. I'm also just hoping for a mild tornado season, so I'm not sitting here.
But the 19-point Trump victory was the biggest factor in that, which will not be present in the primary next week,
well, we'll
2018.
An Indiana Study Committee panel this week recommended the General Assembly explore ways to make voting and voter registration more accessible.
Election Study Committee Chair Greg Walker says he will draft a bill next session to allow a person to register and vote on Election Day. Indiana's current system cuts off registration about a month before. Walker says he'll also push for greater use of vote by mail, and he'll start with a small change to the state's current system. Indiana uses vote by mail for absentee ballots, and Walker says he wants to make that easier by eliminating the requirement that people provide an excuse to vote absentee. While other key Republicans expressed their openness to both ideas, there are also still some objections, including technical issues with same-day registration and worries about the security of a vote-by-mail system.
Mike O'Brien, the General Assembly hasn't been very willing to make big changes to elections in a while. You could arguably go back to voter ID, which is more than a decade ago. But is Committee Chair Greg Walker's willingness to act here, he's out in front of this, is that a sign of optimism or false hope?
No, I think it's a sign of optimism. I think there are some new ways, so same-day voter registration, for example, that will get traction. Because there's better ways to make sure that the voting system is still secure, that Election Day is still secure, and that you can verify that these people registering on the same day are who they say they are. But I take a little bit of issue with the making big changes. We've been in the process of transitioning to vote centers now for a long time, and more and more counties are taking those up. And we'll continue to do so because it's just a better way to vote. It's a more convenient way for Hoosiers, and that's been a big change in kind of culture, getting away from kind of the precinct-based voting system that we had for hundreds of years. But I think there will be some changes. If not this year, this is going to be a weird session in that if this stuff isn't off the ground in 10 days or 2 weeks in the beginning of January, it's probably not going to make it to the end.
Is there a legitimate shot for at least initially same-day registration, which could be a big thing?
That would be great. I mean, I think both of these ideas are good. Voting centers are good. I mean, might even get them in Marion County. Who knew? Anyway, I think these are all good ideas. And part of it comes from the notion, it's the recognition of the fact that we're either 49th or 50th in turnout in every election. And that's disgraceful. And the reason it's disgraceful is because all of these impediments we put in the way of encouraging people to vote. So if we can remove some of them and encourage people, I think that's good public policy.
We've also had such bad Democrat candidates, these elections are barely even competitive anymore. So that's really
just that's your gerrymandering that's done that.
John, do you think there's a legitimate... same-day registration, there seems to be more people focused on that. But the vote by mail system would be obviously a much bigger change to what Indiana has historically done. Yeah. Is that Do you think there's a realistic chance for that at some point in the Hoosier State?
Yeah, I do. And I think one of the drivers for that might be some of what we've seen in the last national election with the, you know, the security problems and questions that we've had with the Internet. I hope that doesn't stop progress with what we've seen coming out of the committee. But people trust the mail more than they, you know, they feel like that might be harder. Now, can it be gamed? Of course. But security is the key here. People have to feel comfortable with it. And hopefully they will.
Quickly, John Schwannis, do you think there's a chance that these things will be enacted at some point?
I think Mike's assessment is on. If this thing is, you know, on rails and everybody seems to be behind it right at the outset, maybe. But there will be detractors who point out to the research we talked about, what, a month and a half ago, where there was the study that showed that there was no correlation between these measures and participation. I'm sure some people will be pointing to that.
Well, finally, a Carmel homeowner put up a scarecrow of Donald Trump in their front yard this week, and they say the attention it's drawn might prompt them to create a scarecrow of Mike Pence and Delaney. The Trump scarecrow is characterized by that screaming pumpkin head and tiny hands. What would the Pence scarecrow include?
You know, I'm not sure what it would include, but if there's a female scarecrow around there, there better be one of Mother Pence very close or heads will roll.
Or I could put an Ann Delaney scarecrow up in my yard.
I would pay money to see that. That's
a challenge.
I want a picture next week.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Katzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.